You may remember Dennis Potter, who between the 1970s and 1990s wrote many plays for British television, including Blue Remembered Hills, Pennies from Heaven, and The Singing Detective. He grew up in the village next to mine, and then, as an adult, lived for much of his life in the Herefordshire town of Ross-on-Wye, close to his birthplace in the Forest of Dean. And it was in 1994 that he gave a remarkable interview to Melvyn Bragg. Dennis Potter had just been diagnosed with a terminal pancreatic cancer, which, out of a sense of mischief, he nicknamed Rupert, after Rupert Murdoch. And the interview with Melvyn Bragg was partly about Dennis Potter's awareness of his own mortality. Now, before this, for many, many years, he'd suffered terribly from psoriatic arthropathy. So he was no stranger to pain and crippling disability. So he was rooted in that little corner of Herefordshire and Gloucestershire, where the River Wye snakes its way through rich red fields before it enters the gorge at Simmons Yatt. It's a very special place for me too, and I keep a photograph of it as my screensaver. In the interview with Dennis Potter, Dennis Potter said this, I quote, "Below my window in Ross-on-Wye, there at this season, the blossom is out in full now, there in the west, early. It's a plum tree. It looks like apple blossom, but it's white. And looking at it, instead of saying, oh, that's nice blossom, last week, looking at it through the window when I was writing, I saw it as the whitest, frothiest, blossomest blossom that there ever could be. And I can see it still. Things are both more trivial than they ever were and more important than they ever were. And the difference between the trivial and the important doesn't seem to matter. But the nowness of everything is absolutely wondrous. And if people could see that, there's no way of telling you. You have to experience it. But the glory of it, if you like, the comfort of it, the reassurance. The fact is, if you see in the present tense, boy, do you see it, and boy, can you celebrate it. And at the very end of that interview, he said this, I'm quite serene. I haven't had a single moment of terror since they told me. I know I'm going to die, whether it's in 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks' time, might be longer. Who knows? And then in the interview, he quotes from a hymn that he'd sung as a small boy in his local Methodist chapel in a tiny hamlet called Berry Hill. Will there be stars in your crown? Will there be any stars in your crown? Now, that is not a plea on Dennis Potter's part for celebrity status, but a cry, a kind of anguished cry, that maybe he hoped and prayed his work had significance. And then he couldn't go on any longer, had to ask for some medication, and said, "That'll have to do, I'm done." So, why on this Good Friday have I quoted from that remarkable interview? For two reasons. It's about a sense of place. In Dennis Potter's case, it was his garden and a tree in Ross-on-Wye. And the other reason is it's about the reality of going through the process of dying and coming to terms with mortality. Now, when Jesus left the upper room with his disciples, according to the Gospel of Luke, he went to the Mount of Olives. Actually, what Luke says is this: he came out and went, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives, and the disciples followed him. When he reached the place, he said to them, "Pray that you may not come into the time of trial." The Greek word, as you probably know, for place in that particular text is topos, or in Latin, locus. And it's intriguing use of the word. It implies, only implies, a known place, a specific locus, as though everyone knew. Perhaps it was deliberate on Luke's part. He and his readers maybe knew, quotes, the place. Or perhaps Luke had a momentary authorial blip and just put in the word "the place." Well, whatever. It set me thinking about the events of Good Friday, not as a series of events, but as a series of places. And in these four addresses, that's what I'm wanting to explore. And I've begun with the Mount of Olives, a place, as those who've been there will know, just outside the walls of Jerusalem, on the other side of the steep Kidron Valley. Of course, over the years since the agony in the garden, the actual place, the locus, the topos, the actual place of Jesus' prayer is disputed. What in Jerusalem isn't disputed? There are four hypotheses. The first is that the place is somewhere very close to the Church of All Nations, which overlooks a garden with the Rock of the Agony. Second hypothesis, the place is near the tomb of the Virgin, a bit to the north. The Greek Orthodox locate the place a little further to the east, whilst the Russian Orthodox claim it's next to the Church of Mary Magdalene. And all that proves is that human beings have a strong love of place, and if in doubt, will always claim that their particular place is the correct one. Same in our own country with the stories of King Arthur, Tintagel, or South Cadbury, or somewhere on the Scottish borders. But let me return to the Dennis Potter interview. There he is, dying. And there's a plum tree in his garden, laden with white blossom, which sings to him of its amazing and wondrous beauty. He saw it, in its miraculous beauty, as though it was for the very first time. So, a question. Might the same kind of thing have happened to Jesus in the place? Might he have emerged from his time of prayer knowing that in all likelihood he had only a brief time to live, and therefore his eyes were opened afresh to the nowness of things, just as Dennis Potter, when he faced his own imminent death, saw the plum tree as a kind of epiphany? Might our Lord have seen the glories hidden within the pebbles of that orchard? Might he have noticed the way the leaves of the olive trees curled? Might he have seen through the branches not just the flickering light of the torches held by those coming to arrest him, but the wondrous glory of the flames themselves? Please don't misunderstand me. I'm not trying to make Jesus into a romantic poet. I guess that the phrase about him sweating drops of blood was all too real. The prospect of all that he might have to undergo must have been almost unbearable, not just physically unbearable, but theologically and spiritually unbearable as well. Was this really the way that God was asking him to journey? Was this really what God had in mind for him? Was his mission about to be fulfilled, or was it about to end in absolute failure? His soul was on the rack long before he was hustled and hassled into the brutality of the show trial. There is a terrible and beautiful irony in the fact that the last trees that Jesus would have seen before the prison doors shut on him were those olive trees, harvested annually for their fruit and their healing oil. The last wood he might have touched before he was nailed to the timber of the cross was the ancient bark of those trees on the Mount of Olives. The last gnarled roots that he saw, like the roots of the tree of life in Eden, were being nourished by the stony soil as he stumbled towards Calvary. Those olive trees had been in that place long before him and would be there long after him. So for the disciples, after the stupendous surprise of the resurrection, might not the place have been the spot to which either in practice or in their mind's eye they retreated when they wanted to be close to their Lord? In quietness, sitting beneath the olive trees, eating a sandwich lunch, and recalling and cherishing their new relationship with their Lord. All of us have special places where the memories crowd in, where somehow God seems very close to us, where maybe we've had our own small epiphanies. So in the next few moments, in the silence, might I suggest you simply bring those particular places to mind, give thanks for them, and allow their restful beauty to nourish your souls. And allow those places, wherever they may be, even now just in your imagination, allow them to be for you an epiphany, a revelation of the mercy and beauty and holy mystery of God in and through Jesus Christ. We keep